My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast. This is Michael Bailey here with a stripped down version on our year anniversary, I think it is. It's just me and sidekick Perry Hamilton.
Skeleton crew, Michael. That's what they call us, I think. Skeleton crew.
Well, people have said that Formula One needs to cut back. We're doing our bit.
We are.
We're also joined by my cat Rex. You might hear a bell ringing, or he might, meow halfway through. It's because he's hungry if he does. Or he's imparting his own Formula One knowledge on you, the listener.
Does Rex get a place in the prediction league if he meows at the right point?
Well, possibly, yes.
He could get a kudos point.
We'll see how that goes.
Right.
He might decide to keep quiet today.
He might.
Which is fair enough. We're all entitled to keep quiet. Right then, let's get stuck into it, shall we? Bahrain. You were the man. If we look beyond the battle for the win, which was about as much of a battle as Bahrain was lush with foliage, it wasn't really a snooze fest. I thought it was good fun.
No, it wasn't a snooze fest, and I will quite happily eat my words on that front. I thought it was going to be boring. I thought it was going to be a procession. I thought it was just going to be a little trot around. But no, I mean, obviously Seb scampered off into the distance, as is, as is his thing, is what he does. But the racing in the back of the pack and from there backwards was really, really engaging.
As I said last week, I believe, I've
never been happier to be proved wrong. So I just keep getting happier to be wrong and wrong and
Let's
wrong.
Let's just keep proving you wrong.
Please do.
Now, you say that, Seb did his thing, rattled off into the distance. But the only way he did that was by two fantastic overtakes.
Oh, yeah.
At the same place. He wasn't on pole. He was on the front row, but he lost that his second place to Fernando going into the first corner.
He did.
And then just produced something which he has done, I think, in the last year or two. He can, when he needs to, and when it's really on the line, he will pull out an overtake that gets him into the position where we then all fall asleep.
Well, that's racing, and the one thing that Seb's been constantly under fire for is the fact that he's not a complete racer. He doesn't have the ability to overtake, but he's shown that actually he does. Ironically, I would normally have said at this point, but he shows that he also only does it when he's told that he has to. Obviously, we've got some
or not
controversy surrounding that. But yeah, he is that kind of driver that if it's there and it needs to be done, then he'll do it. I think also what helped him with that was that I don't think anyone really expected an overtake at that place. It's not known as a passing position on the track. So element of surprise took him there. And absolutely brilliant. Very opportunistic. Took the right moment and executed it perfectly. Because at that point in the track, if you do it wrong, you know there's a coming together there. But I think he absolutely did brilliantly.
It was interesting because it was obviously the same place that he overtook Fernando and he overtook Rosberg. Same place on the track. But I think it was Christian Horner who had told him, "Well, this is a good place to overtake. You should try and do that because coming on to the inside," I think it was turn six, I can't remember which one it was, but
turn six, turn seven, yeah.
So getting to the inside of that corner first will be the best overtaking place, and Seb obviously took his advantage. I hope Christian Horner also said that to Mark Webber.
I'm sure he said it to both of them. What amazed me was that Seb would have listened, because he's not shown much history of doing that, has he? But no, I mean, it's obviously, they want to get as many points as they can, they want to get a win if they can, but it was, I think there was, at one point, I think, wasn't Webber running quite in second place?
It was looking very good for Red Bull.
And, there's that little thought comes up, would they make him pull over if this stayed in this way? But, I mean, it wasn't to happen. I don't think Webber was as gentle or as productive on his tyres as Sebastian was on his. Sebastian made those tyres go very well, with a lot of people struggling with them, a lot of people complaining about them. But, I'm pretty sure if Christian said it to one, I'm sure he said it to both.
Yeah.
But whether it was, once it's been said, it's then up to the race engineers to yammer away and talk and give that constant information. And I'm sure that, the guys in the Red Bull cars were getting the right level of information they required. So I'm sure they were fine with it.
Is it a bit ominous? I remember before Bahrain saying that this was actually a hugely important weekend for Fernando Alonso because he could really establish a pattern if he won in Bahrain, having won in China and having mucked up what was a really strong position in Malaysia. it, you know, would set a pattern that this could possibly be his year. And I think most people going into Bahrain expected Ferrari to be really strong, and especially Fernando. He was
they showed solid qualifying pace, and everyone was expecting their race pace to take a step up from that. He did have a lot to prove. Now, interesting question, which I want to sort of pose to you.
Unusual.
How early did you notice that his DRS was stuck open? Because I noticed it as soon as they showed a shot of his car. And I could not believe that it took the commentators of whatever... I mean, I don't know. I will say I was watching the Sky coverage. But it took them at least a lap, maybe a lap and a half, of shots of Fernando's car to say, oh, there's something wrong with his DRS. Now, I'd said this from the beginning. So did it take you a long time to notice, or were you...
It's a good question. First time around, they had the shot looking back at his rear wing, which obviously by this time, the Formula One coverage guys who put that together had obviously noticed that the rear wing was up. That's why they'd gone to that shot. I sat there watching it, not subconsciously, but not really twigging that he was going around corners and it was open.
Yeah.
So it did take me a few seconds, and then it lingered and it stayed open, and I was like, no, hang on, there's now something. I realised it before the commentators, but it was only by, you know, 5 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
And it obviously looked broken.
Yeah, it was like too far up.
So it did take me
hyperextended.
When I then watched the highlights again and took it in again, I was looking for it, and you could obviously see as he was leading through that it was the wing was broken. You could tell that was there for quite a way, and I think it was De Resta, wasn't it, who was behind him, who mentioned that it was causing him a few troubles. It was De Resta or Grosjean, I can't remember. But I mean, yeah.
But what I'm leading into with that is how... I don't want to say the word stupid. So make up your own word for stupid. But how stupid do you have to be to take your pit stop, have it knocked back into place, and then try and use it again? Surely someone... I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it's Fernando's fault, but there is an engineer somewhere who is responsible for looking at all that telemetry, who then would get on the radio and say, actually, do you know what? Better safe than sorry, Fernando, don't use it. Just do what you can. Obviously, you're at risk, but just do what you can. But that extra pit stop of having to come in and have it get knocked down again, although not a long time stationary, you've still got to drop your speed down. It's still all out of the way. You know, he could have done without that. Someone should have been more on the ball with that and said, Fernando, don't use it. You know, it's broken. We can see that it's all flapped up. I mean, you could say it's classic Italian engineering to just think that if you've whacked it back down with your fist, it must be okay. We've seen it with Alfa Romeos, but, you know, this is Ferrari. This is the high end of technology, and it should have been handled slightly better.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I would have wanted to have tried it again. I suppose they had someone working out whether the time that they possibly could have gained by definitely have, or, you know, by seeing if they did have DRS for the rest of the race, may have been worth the penalty of a second pit stop to driving in and knock it down again. But that was obviously a risk. And you knew when you tried it, and, you know, the shot was of the rear wing, you knew that it was going to just flap back up. It definitely doesn't work.
Yeah, it's completely broken, and that's basically ruined his race from there on.
So it was supposed to be Fernando setting the bar. In the end, has Vettel delivered a kind of message that says that he's the man to... I know probably at the start of the season he was the man to beat, but
yeah,
with the new cars, the way things are going, he's already looking like someone who's going to be very difficult to beat.
He always looks like someone who's very difficult to beat, but we've written Ferrari and we've written Fernando Alonso off in the past when they had a worse car than this, and they've come back and made us look almost like fools. I don't think you can ever write off Fernando Alonso in the same way that you can... You never really say that Sebastian is always going to be the one who wins. It's going to be a solid battle between the two of them, and I think that's going to be what we're really excited about and what we're really looking forward to. So, I wouldn't necessarily say Fernando's out of it. It does tighten things up for him. It does give him a lot less wiggle room. But ultimately, this isn't necessarily his fault. This is a little something that's... But again, it just smacks of almost rookie-ish mistakes that you shouldn't be making at this level, like continuing to drive on and have your wing explode underneath you, which shouldn't have happened, you know. And having a DRS break, get hammered back in place, and then try again, this shouldn't have happened. These are things that are beyond Ferrari, you know, they're better than that. You can understand it with someone in the mid-card or a little bit further down, not to mention any names, Caterham, but it shouldn't be happening in the top flight of the F1. And you know, but if there's anyone who can bounce back and do it, it's Fernando, because he's shown, even when Ferrari were putting out a dog of a car, Fernando, although he griped a little bit and said we're not as competitive as we should be, always the one thing that's consistent is he has always expressed ultimate faith that his team will do the right thing and get things sorted. So I wouldn't necessarily say this is a message. Now, if Seb rolls into Barcelona and absolutely dominates and Fernando's nowhere to be seen on home soil, then yeah, you've got a bit of a problem. But you've got a nice period of time to bounce back. Now, get yourself in the right place. Fernando's going to his home country. I think he's going to do very well there.
Okay, Rex has wandered outside. I think that means he doesn't want to make any predictions later on. So we'll believe him to wallow around in the Norfolk sunshine. What we will do now is this. That's right, it's the EDP F1 Pit Stops. My favourite moment of this moment. We're going to start at McLaren.
Ooh.
Crybaby button. I mean, what a fascinating situation it was with McLaren. Him, Jenson Button and Sergio Perez fighting wheel to wheel, front wing to rear tyre, coming together, touching at 300 kilometres an hour, something Jenson didn't like. I don't think he liked anything that went on with him and Perez. Perez, who of course had been told before the race to get racy,
to toughen up,
yeah. Sort it out. Maybe they need to tell Jenson that now.
I think it comes from the fact that you got three races in, and Jenson is looking at Perez and Beer, and kind of looking with that idea of he hasn't come in with all the fanfare he's come in with, and he hasn't lived up to it. He's been very underwhelming in his first three races. Jensen's there probably thinking to himself, it's quite clear I am now the number one driver in this team. You know, he's a former world champion and what have you. We know Jensen's a tougher driver than that. I think it's just a case of everything getting... This might have been the straw that broke the camel's back. You'd be sick and tired of the McLaren not being competitive by this point in the season. You'd expect them to be doing better. You'd expect them to be challenging, at least for podiums. They're not even that close. I think this is just a case of... When things aren't going your way, you look for everything that's possible, you know, and it's, even if it's cheap. And I don't like to use the word cheap towards Jenson, because I think he's 100% a class act. He is one of the most genuine drivers in the grid. But yeah, I think this is racing. You want your teammate to do well, and if your teammate's doing better than you and you're not challenging for the lead, then maybe it's just okay to let him pass. But as we know, McLaren have often said, you know, we let them race as long as they race cleanly, and they showed that again this weekend. Sergio did not very much wrong. I think if it's your teammate and you're actually running in the points, which McLaren have found it hard to sniff around this season, maybe you say, look, you know, if it's there, make the move, but if it's not, don't force it. And I think Perez forced it sometimes.
Yeah, indeed. I think Jenson made the point of running him off the road at one point, which was certainly him toughening up for a moment. The thing is, you cannot touch. Maybe bouncing off the wheels side by side is okay, but to put your wing into Jensen's rear tyre, that's, you know, it's 50-50. That can quite easily puncture, especially the way the tyres were holding up around Bahrain. It can all be over, and before you know it, you're possibly both out of the race. Apart from that, then, maybe it was good fun. And we should mention Pirelli. It wasn't the best... I mean, they don't have a garage per se, but they do have a paddock, so you know, a motor home in the paddock. So we'll bring on Pirelli. Lots of tyre failures, random ones as well, from debris. I mean, I've never quite seen a tyre shear away like it did on the back of Massa's at one point. But obviously, Lewis Hamilton on the Saturday had a pretty spectacular failure as well.
FP3, yeah.
Now, I've loved what Pirelli have done, and I've backed it a lot, but when you get to this point where they're maybe... the tyres don't actually look robust enough to deal with what's happening on the circuit, you have an issue then, don't you?
You do. However, it's not an exact science. Pirelli have been told by the powers that be they have to make it interesting. It's dumbing it down, obviously, but to make it interesting, you have to have tyres that need to be managed. Unfortunately, due to the nature of the track in Bahrain, it gets very sandy, it's a lot of abrasion, it's very dusty, and the heat it's the heat that I think has played the most part into causing the damage to these tyres. There was a point raised very well on during the race. I think it was during the race. The commentary, someone said, you don't see a lot of marbles at this track. So, you know, we're not looking at degradation. You're not looking at things coming off. You are just looking at tyres getting too hot. And I think that's the problem. That Pirelli's official reports say that Massa's tyre sheared off because it had cuts, and there were cuts from debris on the track, which, you know, we've seen front wings got touched. Massa's own wing was damaged for a lot of the race, what have you. So, yeah, you could say it's from that, but at the same time, it did look very similar to Hamilton's damage that he had, which was, by all accounts, just purely from the heat. I don't think it's a huge problem from Pirelli, but you need to be aware that if these cars are going to go at 300 kilometres an hour and you have a blowout on the rear, you're going to be in trouble, and it's their responsibility to get it right.
Thermal degradation. There will be more of that at some of the tracks this year. That's not going to go away. Paul Di Resta, Force India in general, looked very strong. And I remember back a year ago to our first pod, the one thing we demanded was that Force India improved. It took them 10 months to do it. But
they listened.
Well, they listened. And, yeah. And they are now performing much better than the team providing them with technical knowledge, McLaren.
Precisely.
Paul Di Resta, best race. Looked for a long time like he might sneak onto the podium. In the end, he had to settle for fourth, which equals his best race, I believe, in Formula 1, his best race result. But the way he went about it, fantastic drive.
I would say it equals his best result, but I would say this was his best race. Absolutely. He looked very strong. He looked very controlled, which was quite amusing considering his recent outburst on the radio about he's not getting enough information, it's not good enough, it needs to be better. and we thought it was just Kimi who was amusing on the radio.
Up your game,
but,
boys.
Yeah, come on, you know, make it better.
And girls.
But it worked, you know, and obviously whatever he requested worked for him. The car's looking strong, the drivers are both looking strong, if a bit, you know, questionable. I mean, I think Sutil's just shaking off the rust, really, but he's looking strong doing it. Yeah, great, great development from Force India, and where we expected them to be last year is just, as you say, taking them a little bit longer to get there
in the end. The two local teams, as we like to refer to them, with their Norfolk connections, Lotus, Hethel-backed. It must be said that the podium actually was the same as it was 12 months ago in Bahrain, which meant that Lotus got two steps on it. Kimi second, Roman third. Kimi clearly has been consistent and doing well, and I think we know what he's about. And he does seem to have a good knack of turning sort of rather lost races into very good results when it all unravels and comes together. And I suppose that's good points on the strategy from the team, as well as Kimi being able to get past people. But Romain Grosjean I want to talk about, and I've mentioned him quite a lot in my column this week. Had a very quiet start to the year. Yeah, he's finished in the points in every race, and he has finished every race, and he's kept out of trouble in a way, much like the end of last year. Keeping a quiet show has been a bit of a success, given what happened last year. He was my dark horse, of course, at the start of the season, so I have a bit of a soft spot for Roman. But I was delighted to see they updated his chassis. It seemed to work. Again, his race developed as it went on, and he got better and better, stronger and stronger. Some great moves, overtaking and getting some good positions, and a bit racy. And there's Rex, who obviously is a big fan of Roman too. But I'm really delighted for him, and I just wonder if he can go somewhere properly from here for the rest of the season. Do you agree, Rex? Yeah, he agrees. What about
he
you,
agrees.
Ben?
He agrees. The funny thing was I saw an article that said the title was Romain Grosjean's Return to Form. And my first question was, when did he ever have consistent form? I mean, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but the one thing about Roman is he's always been up and down. And, you know, he's given us a stunning, solid performance. And then he's gone and done something ridiculous. He's been much quieter this year. As you've said, finished in the points, kept his nose clean, done what needs to be done. He likes this track that we've just been at. He likes Bahrain. He's good at it. It may well be a case that we see Roman just get through this season quietly but confidently. I would be surprised if we see a win out of him. There are going to be three or four, maybe five tracks that Roman feels really at home at this season. They're going to be the ones where he's going to be on the podium, maybe a second. As I say, I think tough for him to get a win this year, but if he keeps his nose clean and he gets some solid podiums and some good points finishes underneath him, that boost going into next year with the consistent development of the car, he's going to prove that the team have made the right call in bringing him back. and that's going to really help him going into the next season. So I think long game for Roman Grosjean at the moment. Great drive from him, absolutely no question, great drive. But I think we need to see more of those consistent top three, top five finishes from him before we start anointing him as a return to form, as it were.
Lovely jubbly. Finally, Caterham. They have been left behind, rather, by Virgin. By Marussia in the first few races. This is, of course, they are effectively using their 2012 car still, but they have added a couple of updates for the first time this year. They did before Bahrain, and it worked. They finished ahead of them in qualifying. Charles Peak did, ahead of Jules Bianchi in qualifying, and in the race. Good signs at last.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say there's any certain connection between it, but Caterham re-signed Heikki Kovalainen. Suddenly they start performing better. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, he ran in FP1, didn't he?
Heikki's the good luck charm. You know, we said from the beginning, bring Heikki back. I mean, obviously,
don't lose him.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, that's sort of a bit flippant about it. They've put in some really hard work. We've almost been ready to wave them goodbye on the podcast a couple of times. You know, we've said they've looked lost, they've looked out of place, they don't have enough to make it. But, you know, if they keep performing like that and they keep showing that they've got room for improvement, and if they can finish ahead of Marussia occasionally, then yeah, they've still got room to grow. But I mean, the gulf between Marussia and Caterham and the rest of the midfield is still massive, and that is what really needs to be addressed. I mean, it's all well and good, you know, beating your next door neighbour, but you really want to be, you know, pushing up into those, you really want to be getting into Q2, and you really want to be driving up and getting, sniffing around the points at least.
Okay, then, it's a smaller pool of opinion for these, but we're going to battle them out. We're going to do it a bit differently. We'll do the titles and argue them out. Firstly, driver of the week.
Oh, well, how many nominees have we got for this
there week? There are
hosts. So many. I mean, you could say, obviously, always Vettel is always in contention for this. Strong drive, made some fantastic overtakes, commanded the race, made his strategy work, never was troubled. I don't like to go for that. You know me. I don't like that. I find that a bit boring. Roman Grosjean, we've touched on. Stunning drive from him. Really well. Kept his nose clean. Did great. Paul de Rester, we've also talked about. Best drive that he's ever had of his career. But look a little bit further down the field. Felipe Massa had huge problems with his tyres. Had a broken wing. Still managed to put in a commanding drive. Finished ahead of his teammate. I'm pretty sure he did, didn't he?
He did, yes.
He did finish ahead of his teammate, which was great. Who else was there with a good drive? Sergio Perez. We talked about him as well. Absolutely getting his elbows out and muscling his way past former world champions, including Jenson Button, his teammate, and Fernando Alonso, who admittedly had issues with his DRS. But you've still got to make that pass stick. And Fernando under braking is an incredibly difficult person to reach. Those DRS zones are designed so that you can't just scoot past someone in a straight line. You're going to be hitting the braking zone at the same time, and you should have the inside line. So for Checo to make those moves stick, absolutely brilliant from him. I'm going to give it to Paul de Rester.
Paul de Rester gets
it from me this year, well, for this race, purely because it's a combination of the team stepping up and doing what needed to be done and Paul stepping up and doing what needed to be done. Everything came together perfectly for them. Couldn't quite hold on to the podium position, but you kind of expect it more from Lotus. Grosjean's had more fanfare about him. What de Rester did, I think, was very, very good. So, for me, driver, de Rester. What about yourself?
Well, I have to disagree, do I?
No, you don't have to disagree at all.
I think it would be... I have no complaints with Paul de Rester as well, because theoretically, the only disappointment was that he didn't end up on the podium. And that might be why I would just edge towards Romain Grosjean, because the pressure on him still, on the first two laps of every race, is ridiculous. And actually, once he gets through those, I think he regularly delivers. It's very rare he does something wrong after the first couple of laps.
He needs to find, he's getting his groove.
He does
get his groove early. And I think he's shown ways of improving and doing that.
So Romain Grosjean was fantastic, I think. Team of the weekend.
I think this has to go to Lotus.
Not McLaren,
unfortunately, no. But I wonder where your one's going to go, where your vote's going to go. McLaren obviously are in contention for that, because they have made leaps and bounds, they have made strides, but they shot themselves in the foot by missing out and having to bring Jenson Button in towards the end. That fourth pit stop really killed him, knocked him all the way to the back of the pack. So that was a bit of a mismanagement on their part. I firmly believe if Kimi Raikkonen had been able to qualify higher, he would have won this race. I firmly believe that. But, you know, if wishes were fishes, the world would be an ocean, as well we know. So I think they did really well managing both their drivers and managing the tyres. Kimi made the two-stopper work, and he made it work well. Never really looked like he was going to challenge for the lead, but he certainly looked very strong. And as you say, Roman, great drive, kept his nose clean and did what needed to be done. So for me, team of the weekend is Lotus.
Fair enough, I would agree with that as well. Although, as I said, special mention for McLaren for letting their racers race, which is always nice and something Red Bull maybe haven't done in the past, for example. Not just Red Bull, of course. Plenty of others who do similar. I think the way that Lotus got two cars on the podium was obviously a terrific success for them. It'd be interesting, you maybe had maybe not only if Kimi had finished higher up in qualifying, but if they'd managed to do something else with the tyres, maybe that would have given them something of benefit over Sebastian Vettel. It's interesting that late on, I mean, Kimi had been on his tyres, he still had a lot of running left after his second stint, or no, maybe in third stint. And the tyres were in good nick, but they brought him in early. He had clean air as well, but they brought him in early, effectively to hold off the challenge from behind rather than chase Vettel. So that was a shame that they maybe backed off and decided to consolidate what they had. But then, given maybe some past misdemeanours, it's not a surprise that they did it.
But then you look at where Kimi ended up last season and how close he was to actually being a serious title contender. This could be the difference, because we had a couple of races towards the beginning of last season where they left Kimi out and the tyres hit the cliff too early, earlier than they expected them to, and he dropped all the way back and he missed out. This could be make or break for him. This could be the difference maker, to sit on a solid second or maybe make the chance that you're going to get that first, which is unlikely. I think they did the right thing.
Highlight of the weekend.
Highlight of the weekend actually came in the race, and for me, it was the battle between the two McLaren drivers. Watching them go at each other, and the little back and forth, and the fact that they've had to have a little talk. Dad sat them down and made them shake hands and be friends. Martin Whitmarsh made them sit down and have a chat and have a word, and, you know, they cleared the air. But at the end of the day, it's great, because they're both competitive, they both want to race. Checo wants to prove that he belongs to be there. Jensen wants to get back to winning championships before he retires, which, you know, is not imminent, but he's certainly on the curve down of his career than he is up at the moment. So if he can challenge for some more races, that's what he wants. Frustration on his part, exuberance on Sergio's, and it made for an absolutely great meeting on track. I think they did really well together.
Absolutely, and I wouldn't argue with any of that. My highlight in terms of, you know, the bit that was like, yes, which was also at the same time probably my low light, was Sebastian Vettel's overtakes early on, because they were just brilliant racing. They were the sort of thing no one else was doing.
Yep.
They were really inventive, and at that point the race was over, because yeah.
yeah,
he knew
much.
What happened after that,
barring some kind of technical difficulty, then it was
all
job done.
So sadly, as great as that racing was, it was maybe a little bit too good for the race itself. Right then, wrap it up. Good work, Ped. I like that.
Always a pleasure, Michael.
Hopefully, you know, we'll get the others in later on as we look back from Spain. But we'll bring a little preview podcast for Spain momentarily. It'll be with you soon as we look ahead to Barcelona. But for now, that will do. Twitter, Ped.
At PedHD56. I haven't had any negative responses from my dad, so I'm not sure how many of you out there are tweeting him all the way over in Cyprus, but I'm sure he'd love to hear your tweets.
Yeah.
He'd love to talk about it, so please get on to him as well, at JHDKOUK, and he'll be happy to hear from you.
We'll have to get him a mention on the on the EDP F1 Twitter feed.
Yes, we'll get him to do something, and then we'll retweet something.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That is, of course, at EDPF1. Obviously, don't forget edp24.co.uk for all the Lotus and Caterham news as things progress. My weekly column will also be there online too. But for now, Ped, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you all for listening, and goodbye.